Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the August 9 edition of Commodity Week. The August crop production report will be released Monday. What will it say about soybeans, and what direction might they take? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the senior editor of Farm Futures magazine from Elkhorn, Wisconsin, Bryce Knorr. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas, is on the other phone line.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question. Wayne Nelson, as we look forward to the Monday USDA crop production and the WASD numbers, will it be those or the updated, if they happen to be released, numbers for acreage and soybeans that make the big difference?
Well, I think if they update the acreage for soybeans, that's going to be the one that's going to throw the monkey wrench in the works, because that is the thing that we're looking at. I mean, we're all within a bushel or two here on our estimates as what the corn and the beans are going to make and what's going on. It's going to be the harvested acres that are really important, Todd.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, I agree with Wayne. You know, the acres is sort of still the unknown. We know there's some lost acres out there, prevent plant, and that can help move that bottom line supply-demand balance sheet. But after that, though, we got to see if this demand starts coming forward a little bit more aggressive. You know, the end user has been laying back here waiting for this drop, so we'll see how aggressive they get.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. Out in Atchison, Kansas, on the phone line is Mike Zuzlow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Mike?
Yeah, I agree. You know, what was odd to me this week, Todd, was September corn lost almost a dime to the December. So both the corn and the beans, first part of the week, started to return carry back to the market, and the corn continued on that path while beans kind of fought it. Both of them had good cash movement, and or I should say good cash basis, and the spot basis came around nicely for both. But it was interesting to see that the trade continued to build carry back into the corn market. So I think they're really on the U.S. numbers right now.
Let's take a look at the soybean numbers as they finished up in Chicago for the week. The August contract had a high of $13.66 and a quarter. It's low at $13.13 and three quarters. August bean settled at $13.40 and three quarters of a cent. It was down 9 and three quarters. November beans at $11.82 and a quarter finished 0.75 cents higher. So there was a little gain there, Kurt, in the marketplace.
Yeah, a lot of unwinding of spreads, too. Beans gained on corn, beans gained on wheat this week. Then, too, like we mentioned, there's still some unknowns in the supply-demand balance sheet for the beans, so there's a little bit more urgency to sort of hang on to the beans here for just for a little bit until we get through the report and get through a little bit more of a weather pattern coming in front of us.
Mike, what do you see technically for the soybeans at this time?
Well, I think that 1195 area in November beans was a pretty crucial number. That was tested on Friday, and we failed that. I think that'll be a big number after the report comes out. And I, you know, as far as front end beans go, we didn't see the meal, the spot cash meal, come around too much until the later part of the week, and that tended to bring the spot beans back around. And so we were able to get back to close to $14 in the central part of the corn belt, and especially as we got up into Iowa, Minnesota, basis really jumped, and so front end beans really reacted to the basis fundamentals but not a lot of technicals on the front end, mainly more on the November in my view, Todd.
What do you see fundamentally for Monday? What happens with USDA's report? And what scares you about it, if anything? And, Mike, I'll stay with you on this one.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I saw was it got the best pre-estimate. And I'm like Kurt. I mean, it's going to be the biggest weather driver because you haven't, quote-unquote, made the bean crop yet in the trade's mind. But it got the best pre-estimate. I was pretty surprised that the trade average guess went from, you know, July 295 carryover down to 260-something. And that's a big drop given that the weather's really turned around in favor of a bigger crop. And I don't know how much of that was harvested acres, how much of that was a cut in yield, but I think beans going into the report have the biggest case to prove to be bullish, I, in my view.
So what happens? So what happens, Wayne, if on Monday we come out and USDA says, well, we're not really going to change what the carryout for next year is on the soybeans?
That would be something that could be expected very easily because a lot of times we don't see the adjustments till the September report. And especially this year when we're looking and there's no pods to count because we're much later, when we're not, we don't have anything to weigh, everything along the way that way. And let's face it, the regular crop, the August rains make the beans. This is an even later crop, so it's going to be the last 3 weeks, August, first week of September, and we've still got that weather to live through.
We have a lot of time in the month of August. What have your clients been telling you about their bean crop? Anything they just don't know yet? They have to wait it out?
Yeah, they're real comfortable with the corn in some areas, but the beans is still quite unknown. Some areas beans look real well, but there's a lot of beans in some areas where they're only, you know, knee high, and there's some beans only 4 inches high. A lot of double crop beans didn't get in, and a lot of short beans. I know short beans can put on pods, but beans have a way to go, but they're starting to run out of daylight hours.
Do you suppose, and we'll stay with you, Kurt, for the moment, that $11.82 at the moment is not a bad price for soybeans?
No. It's still fair value here because if the bean crop does come on in here and if the demand does not pick up, South America has a big crop, there's still a $1, $1.50 downside risk longer term.
Let's look at the corn-bean ratio and say, is it fair, Todd? Yeah, it's more than fair. It's looking, I think we were 2.57. I think that also along the way is, let's remember that as we're talking here, South America's talking about they'd like to grow more beans than corn in Brazil. Boom. You know, they're big competitors. We're looking at Argentina the same way. We're looking at all over the world, things going on. And, you know, is China going to be there for everybody?
Mike, I know that you probably agree with this. Is there something that producers ought to be doing to take advantage of it?
Well, I think because of the time of the year we're in and what we're talking about with the weather and the crop not being made, and you add to that the issue that the basis isn't the best in many areas, I think I'm leaning more towards paper positions to give me better flexibility. But I'm going to have to make a decision being light on corn sales at this point, cash corn sales at this point, that I'm going to have to get some beans moved in the cash market for my clients, because we're going to have to store more corn. I think that's one of the things that if the crop is truly as big in both the corn and the beans, that's something we're not used to doing, and we're going to have to go back to gross revenue per acre and strategy on how to store the crop and which crop stores better and which crop would probably make more money on storage as well. So I think it's not going to be quite as simple as we've seen the last 2 or 3 years as we go into harvest.
In Chicago this week, July wheat futures settled the July 14 crop at $6.86.5 on the high. The low at $6.59.5 settled 17 lower. They were at $6.65. Corn futures there had the September with a high of $4.76.75 on the week. The low for the week at $4.64. Settlement price at $4.65.75. The weekly change down 10.25 from the previous Friday in the September. December at $4.53.25. Finished a dime and a half or 10.5 cents lower, Kurt. So he mentioned the fact that we may need to store corn. Are you of that mind?
On storing corn, I like to store corn on the idea that, you know, there's going to be some carry in the marketplace and we can come in and, you know, store it and hedge and capture that basis level. You mentioned wheat there. One thing about the wheat, the December wheat particularly below 6.5 is not positive. When you look forward here to the wheat market longer term into next week here, we're going to have to see some world numbers tighten up some more here to try to give the wheat market some support.
Large crops generally are worth storing. They seem to have better carry as we go along, Todd. And this looks like it's going to be a very large crop, probably a record crop, especially over in central Indiana. So, yes, I think that we're going to see a lot of corn stored. And let's face it, we've got a lot of bins been built by farmers, and they're empty.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I asked that question earlier in the week of one of the analysts, and I think I saw a USDA, I saw a chart on this, too, this week about the amount of storage that was available, and that certainly we didn't have a lot of grain, corn or soybeans, that was in storage at this point. Everything was empty. And so I'm wondering, Mike, when we have, if we have a big crop and not a lot of it shows up on the ground, although I don't know if we have a 14 or 14-2 crop, I mean, that might be pushing it.
Yeah.
Does it make a difference out of sight, out of mind, in terms of the perception and what the marketplace does with price?
I think this is what Kurt was maybe alluding to earlier in the show when he talked about how the demand comes around. Supply is only half the story, and we're only trading half the story, and we have been probably for the last 6 months. And I think this is where we're coming off the commodity super cycle, supply side bullishness. We're coming off the weather supply side bullishness. Now we're going to have to get used to what I would say is maybe a mid-1990s and a mid-2000s type demand cycle coming back. And it's one of the things that I'll be, you know, talking about at the Farm Progress Show with Wiffles on 4th and Central, just to do a little quick plug. But this is where the demand side is the other half of the story, and I think this is where the trade will start looking at demand as soon as we get to the October-November time frame.
That's it. No Zuzalo in the University of Illinois tent. No, I'm just kidding, Mike. Mike will be
I've
there, too.
I've been banned.
Well, we'll welcome you, Mikey.
But, thanks, Wayne.
You know, one of the things is being an old elevator operator we're going to look at here with all of this non-commercial storage or on-the-farm storage, we're going to see the first part of harvest because it's going to be wet because it's later. We're going to see the farmers wanting to go to their own bin, and we'll find a little bit of nervousness amongst our elevator friends at that point in time. We're thinking that if you have to bring corn to town, we think the basis will be better early in the season than later when all of the bins are starting to get full and the rest everybody wants to come to town. So if you do have corn you want to move, we would recommend doing part of it early in the season for a better basis.
Speaking of that, do you guys want to make a comment on that, Kurt? You think about that for a second. Is that the right idea?
Well, naturally, they're going to be eager to bid up. But once we get through the glut of harvest, I think a basis is going to firm up through the wintertime. You know, these guys are empty. They're going to fill up their bins, and they're going to need to get this shook loose, and they're going to have to firm basis into year end because guys are pretty well cash, not rich, but got cash to work with and are willing to hang on to it. So they need incentive to
break. They are cash rich, Kurt.
Hey, Mike, I want to switch you out from demand to consumption, which are two different things, I think. And maybe you can take this up just a bit because it was the export market that did what livestock used to do and was the margin this time around on the drought. The export market went away. The livestock market, it appears by all the numbers, have stayed pretty steady. So I'm wondering on the consumption side, when we see the WASD numbers on Monday, whether this low price might cause the World Agricultural Outlook Board to increase consumption of the coming crop.
I don't think they will this early. I'm inclined to think that we may get a little bit of a knockdown on the ethanol demand because of the EPA announcement earlier this week. That's something that's on the sidelines I'll be watching for. I think what you're talking about, Todd, is that we had feed wheat as the major consumption substitute for the last 13, 14 months. That, I think, has run its course and has been running its course. You see that in the wheat-corn spread jumping back to 185 before correcting about 11 or 12% this week. And I think that's where the consumption comes back around to the corn, like Kurt and Wayne were talking about, because the price has come back and the feeding of the corn. Livestock guys typically just want to feed corn. They don't really want to deal with wheat unless the price is there.
What do you all think the Monday number for corn will be for total production? Mike?
I think we'll stay right around 14 billion.
13.98.
I think about that 13.98, just under 14.
So everybody's at 14 billion. That's a big crop.
That's a really big crop.
And we can put it away.
We can put it away. I think we'll, you know, we'll run into a few problems at times because of the wetness of the corn and be able to keep up drying it for the combine capacity that we have. But we can get away and we can put it away.
Okay. So
can they store it without going out to problems if they put it away too fast? There'll be some problems.
And are you all of a mind that right now the trade is trading that size crop?
There are very few analysts are out there that are much less than that. I think we go down to about a 13.5 with Michael Cordonnier, and that's about the lowest one that I noticed. How about you, Kurt?
Yeah. Thing is, if you get up to 14.2, then we've got some more downside.
Well, that was my question because, you know, if we're at a 14 or 14.2 or we're 3.98 or wherever we are in that close to 14 billion bushels, and we have December corn at 453 and a quarter at the moment, and we only lost a dime and a quarter on the, or a dime and a half on the week. Either things have really changed and there's a lot more consumption out there, or we've got a lot more downside left in the marketplace.
Well, some of these elevator guys, I mean, they're talking their position. They're talking $3 cash corn, you know, later on this fall. They want to go there.
You know, it's possible, but we're not going to think that that's going to happen. There's a couple things, Todd. Even if the EPA talking about lowering some of the renewable fuel standard requirements, things like that, $4 and a quarter corn and $105 crude oil means that it's very profitable for the energy companies to blend the maximum 10% in, and it's going to go in. So we should be able to use some more corn in the ethanol.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. This is the August 9 edition. Our panelists in studio include Wayne Nelson and Kurt Kimmel. On the phone line is Mike Zuzulo. When we come back, we'll be joined by Bryce Knorr of Farm Futures Magazine.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey. The numbers are in, and this July in Illinois was cool and dry. The statewide average temperature was 73.3 degrees, 2 degrees below average. It ranks as the 19th coolest July on record. The statewide average precipitation was 2.7 inches, 1.3 inches below average. It ranks as the 29th driest July on record. The rainfall in Illinois was unevenly distributed across the state. Much of central and northern Illinois were 1 to 3 inches below average, while southern Illinois was several inches above average. The first week of August was 1.5 degrees below average. Much of northern Illinois and far southern Illinois saw at least an inch of rain this week, but much of central Illinois remained dry. The forecasts are pointing towards a cool August. Temperatures over the weekend and into next week will be 1 to 3 degrees below average. Highs will generally be in the upper 70s in the northern half of the state and in the lower 80s in the southern half. Lows will be in the upper 50s and low 60s to the north and in the mid-60s across the southern half of the state. The next chance of rain is on Tuesday. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast and the monthly outlook indicate a higher probability of below average temperatures across Illinois and the Midwest through the end of August. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at agrigoldgiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the August 9 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana. From Elkhorn, Wisconsin, Bryce Knorr, the senior editor from Farm Futures Magazine, is on the phone line. Bryce, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us. We do appreciate you doing that today.
You bet.
I think that you've done some surveys of farmers. What have you been looking for?
Well, we survey farmers 3 times a year for not only their production estimates, but also for their management practices. We just completed a survey of about 1,350 growers, roughly using the same time frame that USDA did. And what we found is pretty much the lowest production estimate in the industry right now, about 13.4
4.85 billion bushels. A couple reasons for that. First of all, farmers told us that their yields are going to be around 156 bushels per acre. But perhaps more importantly, they told us they planted 1.3 million fewer acres of corn than USDA estimated in June, and they plan to harvest about 1.8 million fewer acres. So what farmers, I think, are saying is that perhaps a million acres didn't get planted. Some of that ground did get switched to soybeans, but not all that much. And then finally, a lot of guys are looking at some of this late corn, particularly in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, and thinking that it is not going to make grain. It will be cut for silage.
How accurate have your farmer surveys been in the past?
Generally, we're within 2% of USDA. So that's, of course, with a 14 billion bushel crop. And I actually think USDA, I don't believe they're going to change any of their acreage. I think their yields will come in more about 157, maybe higher. So I'm also looking for a 14 billion bushel crop. That's what I've been warning people to expect.
Okay, if you're out here now then, Bryce, with the numbers that you're talking about, we should raise back up on our price later in the season. For the farmers now, though, what are you thinking they should be doing as far as pricing corn?
Yeah, basically most guys have loaded up, hopefully, on revenue protection, so they've got some staying power here to wait to see what the numbers are, then to see what their yields are. But what I've been telling people is just because you built all these bins doesn't mean you can throw it in the bins unpriced and hold it, planning to hold it for a rally. Because if everybody does that, we can be pretty much assured we aren't going to get a rally. So I've been telling people to start checking into hedge-to-arrive contracts, storage hedges, particularly if we can move that December-July carry off to 35, 40 cents a bushel.
Bryce, on the corn, on the survey you conducted there, you said you surveyed some other things other than just acreage and yield. What were those observations you came up with from them?
Well, one thing for both corn and soybeans, we found that farmers have forward priced a lot less of their crops than normal. I don't think that's a big shock. I think that's what everybody's been saying. But there's a even though farmers expect prices to be lower and expect some tough sledding, they're fully prepared to throw it in the bin and wait for higher prices. So that's why, you know, I think we could see at some point some firmness, but we could be setting ourselves up for a real train wreck later, particularly if we have a good crop in South America and the demand stays flat or at least doesn't pick up as much as we might hope.
Bryce, following up on the production number and what Todd was asking before we brought you in, on the if we came in at like 14 billion bushels on corn, I guess there's a third option I was thinking of during the break, and it could be that the beans continue to lead or the beans take over as the leadership. Where do you stand on the bean production, and what do you look for in the futures market? What do you think they've priced in as far as ending stocks heading into Monday?
Well, for soybeans, we found yields of 44.1 bushels per acre. We found more planted acres than USDA reported at the end of June, up by maybe 200,000. But, again, people are telling us that some of those acres got flooded out, so our harvested acreage number is actually lower, about 600,000 acres lower than USDA. But the crop would still be a record. 3.369 billion ending stocks. I'm fairly optimistic about demand. I even with that bigger crop, I think we could only take ending stocks up to maybe 235 million. That's still a lot, and doesn't necessarily indicate that we really need to rally this market much unless we start running into some weather. We are starting to get some drier conditions, perhaps in the Western Corn Belt, moving in. And so we might be able to get some type of rally going there. I think a lot will probably depend on just what sort of acreage numbers USDA comes up with on Monday.
Bryce, have you been able to take a look at the RFS announcement from earlier in the week? And do you have any idea of what that might mean for the marketplace?
Well, you know, nobody knows because we don't really know what the details are going to mean. But I think it confirming what we've all suspected is that the ethanol demand is really, really flattened out. It's plateaued. We don't have that driver like we've had really for the last decade. And we don't have anything to replace it at this point. We have more export competition around the world. We no longer have the demand, the institutional demand to own commodities from pension funds and others. So I think we're entering a period now with a new price dynamic where we've taken a lot of money out of the market, and we're shifting the price curve back over to a weaker position. It seems to happen about every 5 to 7 years or so. So I think we're entering a new phase here where price expectations have to be lower, and that could have some real significant impacts in terms of production, margins as well as land prices down the road.
Bryce, what if we had a hard frost September 25th? What would that do to prices?
Well, I can only remember 1 year that we had a freeze that really affected yields. That was 1974. We had two of them, and the first one was in early September, and then we had another one later in September, and that really damaged the crop. It's very difficult to tell. If we actually do some significant damage, we might lose 600 million bushels, and that could change the dynamics. I think a more likely scenario is if we just have an awful lot of wet corn that doesn't store, some bad quality, and that causes a lot of headaches.
Is this Chinese corn demand going to keep coming at us?
Well, that is the only potentially real bullish scenario I see out there, is that the Chinese crop is smaller than we expect. They've had a lot of very hot weather in the central and southern part of their growing region. They're going to be above 100 degrees in that part of the country again this week. Now, they have been getting some regular rains, and the northern areas have been cooler as well. We don't have a real good handle on just what their crop is. The demand, I think, will continue long-term, but it's going to fluctuate greatly from year to year.
Bryce, this will be the first year if we have this big a crop that we could put it away in the bin, and we also have all the ethanol plants up and running at full capacity. Does that really change anything in terms of the ability to store and price later?
I think farmers are going to have to, like I've been saying, I think farmers are going to have to be extremely careful about how they store this crop and storing it unpriced, and they're going to have to use some very good risk management skills. They get a good basis bid, or can maybe get a push by selling or locking up the basis on their entire crop at once. I think they're going to have to look for those sorts of opportunities because 14 billion bushels is just a whole lot of corn, and if we take carry out up to 1.5 billion, maybe 2 billion bushels, that's a lot of carry out. And there's no indications that production around the world is going to get any smaller in 2014.
Bryce Knorr is the senior editor at Farm Futures Magazine. Now for a final word from our panelists. We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson.
Well, Todd, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the government does say on Monday. Will they reduce the acreage? Will they change any of that? And will the carryouts change? We'll have to wait and see.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
I know the grain market's a dollar lower than where we want it to be, but I would not get caught in the trap of just storing in the bin. But there's a lot of creative ways out there to add to your bottom line.
And Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
The emerging market demand side continued to improve this past week. China July coal imports up 17%, a new record. Industrial production best since February. Dollar tested a six-month low.
Thanks to all the folks in studio with us. Have a great week. Don't forget, Monday is Crop Production Report Day. We'll have all the numbers just after 11 o'clock. You can find them on our website at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.